Ken Merkel here. Oliver Brenner here.
And Ken the mayor's here. I'd like to ask Paul Cody to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance today.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Paul. Are there any added agenda items? Let me check that off. Hearing none, we'll go to the consent agenda. Are there any comments or discussions about the agenda or the consent agenda? Yes.
I'd like to state a conflict, a possible conflict of interest with the bill payable to Wilderness Gardens.
The conflict of interest by Councilor Stu is noted.
Possible.
Is noted. Thank you, Stu. Any further comments about the consent agenda? Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
I shall move.
I second.
Been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda. Any questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? It's unanimously approved. Are there any public comments at this time? Hearing none, we'll go to item number 7, resolution number 2012-07, adoption of the fiscal year 2012-2013 budget for the city of Lapine. Any council comments?
Do you want me to jump in, Mr. Mayor?
And our staff comments at this time.
All right. Well, we've spent the last two or three months working on the budget. We started out with a budget committee who you were a part of. They met a couple times. They made recommendations to the council. Council's met and has determined the budget. And we have construct the budget. We have the budget available for you for review. All the budget items have been thoroughly vetted and discussed and I think approved. And at this time, unless there is some further, and you might ask the public or amongst yourselves if there's any final issues with the budget. And I think you have a copy. I'm trying to find it real quick.
Number 7.
I'm getting there. Got all these fives. I've never seen so many fives in my life. There it is. You have a resolution. Just like this, it's two pages. And let me just read into the record what it says here. It's resolution 2012-7. Be resolved, the city of Lapine hereby adopts the budget for fiscal year 2012-13 in the sum of $4,325,335. Now on file at City Hall of Lapine. Furthermore, make appropriations. Be it resolved that the amounts for the fiscal year beginning July 1, 2012, and for the purposes shown below are hereby appropriated as follows. And we have a list of general fund, public works, tourism fund, sewer fund, and then water fund. Those represent all of our funds. And then the total appropriations and the total unappropriations and the total adopted budget. And then also, as part of the budget process, imposing and categorizing the tax. Be it resolved that the City Council of the City of La Pine hereby imposes the taxes provided for in the adopted budget at the rate of $1.90 per thousand of assessed valuation for general operations, and the taxes are hereby imposed and categorized for the tax year 2012-13 upon the assessed value of all taxable property in the city as within the general government limitations. And we're not up against any general limitations. There's a major five over there that we have to evaluate as part of this process, okay? And, you know, Mayor, I'll turn it back over to you for proper disposal, but we do have a motion, and did Patty, or Lord, did you provide them with a motion?
No.
Okay, well, let me give it to the Mayor. Mayor? This would be the resolution or the motion, however you want to frame it.
Okay. Are there any questions or any comments at this time about the proposed budget? Hearing none. Do you have one? Okay. Hearing none, I will ask the council to approve resolution 2012-07 adopting the 2012-13 budget, make appropriations, and impose and categorize the tax levy upon the assessed value of all taxable property in the city.
So move.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any further question?
No.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Did I hear aye, Danny?
Not yet, because it didn't come. You asked for it before I got a chance to.
Aye.
It took me a minute to realize I hadn't heard it. Let the record reflect that the vote for the resolution for the count, the 2012-13 budget was unanimous. Thank you very much. I will take a few minutes to ask if there's any public comment about the budget. Hearing none, I will proceed. Employee handbook addendum update.
Actually, because it's thick, they're printing, because we got one without lines and had a couple little changes. So if you wanted, you could do the cemetery, and then we just come back to that.
Okay.
Because it's, that's kind of a slow copy machine.
Okay. We'll move then to a presentation of the La Pine Cemetery. Presentation on the La Pine Cemetery.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and council members. And I want to recognize that two members of the La Pine Community Cemetery Association are with us tonight, or possibly three. There's three of you. And we thank you for your service. And what is being proposed is the transfer of the La Pine Cemetery from the La Pine Community Cemetery Association to the City of La Pine. And I have provided you with sort of a two-page overview of the nuts and bolts of how that would be accomplished if, in fact, the city were receptive to assuming that responsibility. And I might note that out on Reed Road, at the very end of Reed Road, to the east, we have a 40-acre parcel of land that was donated or dedicated or deeded to the city back in 2007. And that has been a burial site out there for more than 80 years. more than 90 years. I was out there the other day and I saw a headstone from 1919. It's been there a long time. There's approximately 400 people that are buried out there. And these folks at the Lapine Cemetery District, their association, have been taking care of it for many, many years. And they always contemplated at some point that they'd like the city to assume that responsibility. And so they're knocking on our door now and suggesting that maybe this is the proper time for us to entertain the assumption of that. And so this handout just provides you an overview of any and all things that would be involved with the assumption process. It's pretty straightforward. As I understand it, it's approximately two folks a month buried out there. A lot of the activity is with the mortuary and a gentleman named Paul Cody who opens and closes the graves. We've been provided with the records of the cemetery. They have a global positioning device that helps identify the burial sites. There is no debt or pending legal actions associated with our assuming that role, if in fact we want to assume it. I talked to our attorney. He's reviewed the documents that have been provided to us by the cemetery district. He advises that he will need to construct a general transfer agreement, and then he'll also have to construct an ordinance expressing the terms and conditions of operating the cemetery. So we have a standard protocol. In my discussions with the cemetery district, I said that I believed if in fact the city took it over, that we within reason would try and follow all their traditions and prescriptions and standards so that the quality of service and care and respect would be similar over here as it has been with these folks who've done it for so many years. And I might note that there are three of them here and we might want to call upon them and gain their perspective. And then afterwards, I'd just like some kind of direction that in fact you would like to assume that responsibility. And if that's your desire, then I'll see to it that it happens. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. I think it's appropriate this time that we ask the members of the cemetery board to make a few comments to the council, give us a little history and some background and the kind of work you do, and I will invite you to our chairs. let the record reflect that Vern Walters and Carol Brewer are members of that board, and we also have in the audience tonight Paul Cody, who has been long associated with the of the work and the burials there at the cemetery. Would you give your name though, please?
I'm Vern Walter.
And push the red button if you want everybody to hear what you're going to say.
Okay. How's that?
Thank you.
Okay. I'm Vern Walter, and I've been associated with the cemetery off and on since late 1970s. I don't know. You've probably got a history of the cemetery in front of you, so I don't know exactly what information you want from us as far as what it would employ with the city or how the city would handle would be. My understanding is that when somebody passes on, most of the information is gathered through the mortuary, and there's a contract that they fill out, and the mortuary would have that filled out, that contract filled out, and then would turn that over to the city, and the city would then, a city employee would input that into a program that would reside on the city's computers that would give that, put that information into the computer program, And then from that program, whenever it was needed, you could print out a map, a plot of everybody that's buried there, and then you can do various sorts by name or by plot or by date or however you wanted to sort that. And that would basically be all that would be required, I guess, of the city or city employees. Paul Cody has worked out there for many years. He opens and closes the graves, and the cost associated with that is between him and the mortuary, or him and the people, the family, the person being buried, so that would have nothing to do with the city. That would just be a private contract with him. And then he also does maintenance out there, repairs the fences, gravels the road, opens up new walkways, new roadways, and there's funds in the cemetery account that pay for that. And the account, I think, has about, what, $17,000 roughly in it, and that would be transferred over to the city. The state of Oregon requires or requests that all cemeteries be what is called a perpetual care cemetery, or at least work toward that end, which means that there's enough money in the bank that the interest off that money would take care of the maintenance and the upkeep of that cemetery. And so we have been striving toward that because there is very little maintenance out there. There's no power, there's no water, so there's no grass, there's nothing to take care of. Most of the cleanup has been done by volunteer organizations, veterans groups, and so on, and city community. So the maintenance has only been repairing fences when they get vandalized or a tree falls on them, and putting opening up new walkways and graveling the roads. So the only thing I guess that we would ask or request is that the monies that come from the cemetery are placed in a separate fund that would then continue this perpetual care idea and not just be thrown into the city's say, general fund and get mixed and intermingled and eventually lost, that the cemetery monies would stay separate cemetery monies and income from the sale of rights of interment would go into that fund to maintain the cemetery as it continues on.
Okay. Carol, any comments?
I think he's presented quite well. I must say it's a very economical place to be buried. And our bylaws do state that you must have lived here or do live here. So once in a while we went into a problem of somebody wanting to transport Grandpa from Los Angeles to be buried here because the expenses, you know, so little here and so great there. So, you know, you have to be a little vigilant on that.
Okay.
But it's a very nice place and I think essential to the city.
Okay. I'd like to ask, can we turn that down? I don't know if anybody else can hear the hum, but
yeah.
It's...
Yeah. Down further?
Yeah.
I thought that was my brain working.
Maybe there it is.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Council. Is there any questions from the councilors? I think I sat in on a previous meeting and have a good deal of information, but I think we have here in front of us a repository of a lot of things that have gone on in the cemetery. So,
I have a question.
Kathy?
I'm just wondering, over the time, because there are 40 acres, is there an issue with people looking at this as a recreational place that maybe off-road vehicles or such taking? How much does it take to keep the roads in condition? everything.
Well, some of it is unimproved, so they don't basically go there, but...
Yeah, there's only about, and this is a rough guess, but probably 5-7 acres that have actually been improved and are being used now as cemetery. But part of the agreement, when the Order of the Redmen transferred the land to Lapine, was that it be used as a cemetery. And we have over the years logged it one time. I had Bud Kendall log it, and he donated the proceeds of the logging to the cemetery to help us do fences and gravel and road and so on. But I, you know, it's, and there's been no, as far as I know, and I'm pretty confident of this, there isn't any use going on out there, like people making motorcycle jumps or trails or ATV trails or anything like that. There's what's being used as a cemetery is being used as a cemetery, and the rest of it is just basically unimproved forest land.
I think the insurance policy that we have is just about $500 a year. It covers many things.
And that, I would assume, too, would go away, the cost of that insurance policy, because it would probably fall under the blanket of the city.
And the city's evaluated that. I turned that over to Art Uecker for his review, and he passed it on to the state. And they came back and said there would be no additional cost for assuming that responsibility. That would be melded into our general liability costs.
Okay. Stu, you had a question?
I didn't have a, no question.
Comments?
Comment was, right. Okay. Is, you know, it was, the history of the cemetery out there is, I think, vital to the city of Lapine. You know, the cemetery has been there long before the city was ever here. And, you know, I think the city and the community and the county actually owes a great deal to the cemetery board and all the work that they've done. And I think it's in the best interest of the community and the city to take the cemetery over. And, you know, again, we owe a great deal of thanks to these folks, and especially this man sitting out here, who has put a lot into the maintenance of the cemetery. And I think we owe them a great deal, and we need to carry on the traditions that they have started for the rest of the community and for the city.
Thank you. Any, Dan?
Yeah, I guess the only thing that, much along the same line as what Stu was saying, I think that Carol mentioned some bylaws. One of you mentioned bylaws, and then the red man thing and whatnot. And I just think it'd be really nice if we could, as was stated in your letter, Steve, to respect and carry on those things as much as possible, because they're probably there for a reason. I don't know what deed restrictions there may be, but they're probably there for a good reason if they exist. And so anyway, I just think we've been good custodians of the property through you folks, and I hope that we can continue to do that.
Don?
I'm in favor of the transfer. Okay.
I am too, and I'd just like to add that maybe somewhere down the road that we would consider putting some kind of plaque that speaks to some of the history of from where it started, how it transferred, how it was maintained by volunteers, and how it came to the city.
There is a plaque of sorts there by the flag where they have the shelter.
Mm-hmm.
It explains a few things.
Okay. Anything else?
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
Carol, is there a written history of the cemetery someplace that we could kind of incorporate into some of the history here in the city of La Pine?
There is the book that exists. It's called The Pioneers of La Pine. And there's some write-up in that. And I'm sure the county has some, and every once in a while you'll have to go clear to Prineville, because this at one time was Crook County, and they have information.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Thank you very much for joining us, and thank you for your comments.
Mr. Mayor, and what I would do is follow up is we will construct the general transfer agreement, and we will put together an ordinance that will be brought back through public hearing process, and this will probably take place over the next 60 days or so, and so we'll kind of work with the cemetery board to make for that transition, and hopefully by that 60-day period then be poised to address any and all concerns associated with the cemetery as folks bury their family members, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay.
Item, are we ready to go back to item 8?
Yeah, you should have passed those out. They came to you in a pile as you see.
Yes, we passed them.
Okay, what you have, Council, is the, we wanted to clean up a couple things in our handbook, which we talked about before. Things like you have a new city manager, but more importantly, getting the retirement in, which we've added for our current staff, and the insurance issues. So, and then Steve had a couple others that he wanted to put in to we didn't want to, we didn't go into things that were going to cause a bunch of changes, because that will happen down the road, I believe. So if you have an underlying copy, I'm assuming you got an email, or is it in your packet? Besides the one I just gave you?
Yes, we have one on our list.
Okay, so the one I just gave you doesn't have the underlying changes. So, because I want to give you a clean copy, and then you have in whatever packets they handed out to you, you would have the underlying changes. So if you want to, I don't know what you guys had over there and what you have. If you, obviously you don't want to read 30 pages, no. So, and actually I have the clean one, so it's a little harder for me. I don't have a aligned one. Did you have that aligned one in there, Steve? Down here in his.
I have a couple
here.
Page
8, page 14.
Page 8, we'll go to page 8, thank you. Go to page 8, you can go to the clean one.
Rick, do you want to?
Yeah, thank you, sir.
And I might note that the cleanest copy has the acting city logo.
Yes.
Super logo. I'm calling it the acting city logo.
Black and white acting city logo.
Black and white acting city logo.
Here's
the
pretty one.
Yeah, come on. Okay, item B under the employee classifications, it was really the last sentence, which is all city positions will have a written job description, which we approved a few weeks ago, which shall generally describe the duties of the position, although each employee shall be required for any duty as may be assigned from time to time by their supervisor, to give us the flexibility as we move into some new areas of snow and different things. We wanted to make sure. Do you have that here?
I don't see any lines in.
No, because I handed out the clean copy.
No, but I'm saying the one that's supposed to have been here on our desk,
right here,
in a folder. Well, you don't have that one.
Yep,
that's the one.
We've got it. This isn't.
No, I don't want a clean copy. I want to follow along with me. Do you have one, Dan?
I get mine to Rip.
Okay.
Yeah, the reason I made copies of the clean one is I assumed you already all had the lined one.
No, have one.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, so that's that change, just basically giving us flexibility, giving management flexibility. And so let's go on from there.
Page 14.
And consequently, that changes. Okay, here's some, obviously, we did not have any need to have on-call, any on-call positions in the past. So we went ahead and added that, and you can read that. I guess for the audience, I can read it. Non-exempt employees may be required to be on call, which is defined as being ready and available by phone or pager to respond to emergencies upon request outside of the employee's normal work hours. Non-exempt employees who are placed on call by their supervisor will receive $50 per week additional compensation for each full week of on-call duty. An employee who is on call, who is called out to respond to an emergency outside of his or her normal work schedule, shall be paid at 1.5 times the employee's regular rate for the time actually worked, or a minimum of 2 hours, whichever is greater. So they're going to get a 2-hour minimum. If an on-call employee is not called out, no hourly pay will be earned or paid. Department managers will establish reasonable response times for call-out emergencies. Justification may be required by a department manager to validate the call-out was an emergency. Employees who are on call must adhere to city policies. Any variance policies may result in disciplinary action up to and including termination. That's J, and that's all new.
Okay.
Any questions on that?
Page
18. Page 18. And the bottom, under prohibited uses,
what page?
18. Page 18. Very top, prohibited uses. And this was an internet policy. And you know, there's this, you'll see this expand probably in the next update. But as you all know in your own businesses and in your own life, and we just use Facebook as an example, but you know, it's more addicting than booze and cigarettes. And you know, I mean, people spend all day on it, and you all know that, and they have a hard time shutting it off when they're at work. So we felt, and a lot of companies are doing this, and when I talked to our labor folks, they said, yeah, it's going to get, you pretty soon you'll have pages on that. But we didn't have it addressed at all, so we went ahead and added that accessing or using social networking sites or services, including Facebook, during work time, and that would be not, if you read the top part, it's inappropriate. So we have it in our policy that while you're at work, you should not be on Facebook. And of course, it could be, what's up, the other ones?
Twitter, yeah. YouTube.
Yeah.
MySpace.
Yeah.
Your space, their space.
Anybody's space.
And that was at the request of our city manager, but I think it was a very good one.
Yes.
So we went ahead and added that in.
Very appropriate.
25.
Just a question I have.
Question?
That doesn't include breaks, lunch,
they,
while on city property.
It's read it. I imagine. Well, no, I know it is. It does.
Yeah.
It says what it says.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, this is again. Obviously, if you're on lunch hour and you're probably, that's, you know. But
right now, I'm just trying to make it a real stringent and say, no, so I don't think it's a problem now. I don't want it to be a problem in the future. And I just see how things are going. And that is more and more people are connecting socially. And I think that's a good thing. But I think you ought to do it at home. I don't think you ought to do it at work. I think while you're at work, you ought to have the focus of being at work. And we've got so much work here to do anyway. I want them just to be focusing in on work here at hand.
My comment would be that the equipment is provided for your official business and your work, and your being here is to use that for that, and that eliminates using it on lunch hour and breaks or anything, so.
You know, under email, it talks about incidental email, and the, there's been some cases, you know, obviously that's come up in previous things, and they pretty much, like, you aren't, you know, you can't, someone got a personal email on the computer, you're not going to terminate anyone for that. No one's going to back you on that. So I think it's really good common sense. And so it's just added in, you know.
And I'm trying to send a message. And that is, let's work at work. Let's play while we're not at work. Okay. And let's not mix the two anymore than we have to. Right? And that's all. I think that's reasonable.
Next.
Okay, page 25, I believe, right?
Yes.
Bottom, and then 26.
Okay. And this was, we had, in our previous policy, we had only insured the employee. But then we had changed a few months ago back to, we did an $800 cap. It could be an employee and a kid, or an employee and a spouse, employee, spouse, and kid. But they got to pay the difference. If it was $1,100, we'll pay $800, they pay $300. And so we needed to update that. So you can, the city will contribute to an eligible full-time employee's health, dental, life, and disability insurance premiums for city plans only up to a maximum combined total of $800 per month. Employees shall be solely responsible to pay any insurance premiums not covered or otherwise paid by the city. And for all premiums for eligible family members. As in the past, no benefit is vested, and the city reserves the right, in its sole and absolute discretion, to amend, modify, or terminate, in whole or in part, any and all of the provisions of its insurance and benefits plan, including without limitation benefit levels, carriers, and or its contribution to or payment of insurance premiums at any time. Further, the city reserves the right, power, and authority to administer, apply, and interpret the benefit plans described herein. To the extent that any of the information contained in this handbook is inconsistent with official plan documents, the provisions of the official documents will govern in all cases. So this sets what we're doing now and puts it in writing in our policy. Then the retirement's the same thing we've been doing. The city does not currently participate in the PERS system. The city currently provides eligible employees of the 457B deferred compensation plan. Under the plan, the city will contribute up to 3% of an eligible employee's annual base salary. The city will also match each eligible employee's percentage contribution to the plan up to a maximum of 3% per total potential maximum contribution by the city up to 6% of an eligible employee's base salary on an annual basis. As in the past, the city reserves the right in its sole and absolute discretion to amend, modify, or terminate in whole or in part. Go on with that. That's your, the fact you can go change it. Any questions with medical or retirement?
There's a young lady over here that's...
Would we need to put the vesting rules in there as well? Or is that just part of the
policy? I think you have to follow the... That would be where you follow the documents that come with it.
All right.
Okay. Let's see.
That's all I saw.
Okay. And then we'll have this go out to our current employees and new employees, and then they will sign it that they've read it, and so on and so forth.
Does the council need to take any action?
Yes.
To okay,
yeah, you need to approve the updated revised handbook.
I'm thinking that there was one, and maybe you said it and I didn't hear it. Well, I think we added some language that provided for versatility of employees, and that is you have your normal job duties, but as need arises, you may be requested to do other activities. Because again, as we grow, for instance, just the cemetery district, I mean, we are going to have to multitask. And so the language was rather narrow as to you did your job description, and I think we widened it to include or other job duties as prescribed, something like that?
Yep, I read that first.
Oh, okay. And I'm sorry, I just missed it.
On page 8.
Okay, but it's a real important component part of the program is to make sure we can do all things for all people with who we have.
Okay. Are there any?
Yeah, I don't know if there's anybody that wanted to make a comment on this agenda.
On page 8 under there, it says all city positions will have a written job description which shall generally describe the duties of the position, although each employee shall be required to perform any duties as may be assigned from time to time. So that clarifies that.
Okay. At this time, we'll also take public comment on the changes you've heard. Are there any public comments? Hearing none, we'll proceed. Thank you. Council, does anybody have any questions or comments about what we've heard in the way of changes?
I support the changes. I think they're good.
Yeah. You're coming? Mm-hmm.
Don? I like everything changed.
Okay.
If you'd like a motion,
we accept. I will entertain a motion to accept the changes to the city employee handbook as written.
I so moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to accept the changes to the employee's handbook. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Let the record reflect it's unanimous. Thank you. Transition room tax update.
Mr. Mayor, council members, very important aspect of city operation is risk management, and a component part of risk management is assuring the financial controls are in place relative to all of our funding sources. And when we looked at the TRT monies, we saw two vulnerabilities that we're trying to cure. The first was we have received TRT monies. These are transient lodge monies that we are authorized to collect, and some of them are for the city and some of them are for the state, and we have six different organizations in the city, the lodging organizations that provide us these proceeds. But we've never taken a look at how they provide us with those monies, whether they thoroughly understand how the distribution process is supposed to work. So we have engaged an auditor to review the six, and has it all been done? Okay, we've had an auditor go out and review the books and talked to the six providers of these revenues so as to assure that they understand and work with us, and we work with them so that we know that, well, we just have a handle on those monies, okay? And then likewise, we turn around and we distribute approximately 70% of those proceeds that are received, which is $50,000-$60,000 a year, to the chamber and to the tourist bureau. And in previous years, we have had a TRT committee that kind of provided some guidance and oversight. And we also had a contract at one time with the chamber about how the reporting relationship would work and how the monies would be distributed and what they would be used for. And for whatever reasons, the TRT committee, it may still exist, but it's not active. And the contract in place has expired. So I've talked to the chamber, I've talked to Ann Gaywith, I've talked to her a couple times, and more recently I talked to Ann and Mike Jensen, who's the prior president, said it would be important for us to reactivate that contract. Not in any way saying anything is wrong with how monies are being distributed or anything, but just again for assurance, control assurances that the public monies are safeguarded and that if there's any liabilities, they can quickly be checked. And it's just trying to have a strong auditing and control procedure. And the chamber's been very receptive. They said, yeah, fine. We'll reactivate. We're glad to reactivate that contract with you. And so that's kind of a status update. We're going to have that contract, the contractor come back for you folks to take a look at. They'll go over the chamber to look at. If there's any issue between the chamber and the city, those will be massaged, and then we'll have it. And primarily it'll just say, here's how these monies are intended to be distributed, and that the chamber agrees to have a reporting relationship with the city, and that's about all. But that way we know the monies that are coming in, that we've looked at them and assured the oversight of them, and the monies as they're being distributed, likewise we're assuring the oversight, so that we can turn around to our public and say, your monies are a safeguard. Right. So that's the status update. And I leave it to you folks who want to have a discussion or add anything to that.
Any comments, Council?
I have a comment.
Okay.
I think this was brought up primarily because I asked for a report on how that money was spent. And, you know, I looked around and it seemed like there was just no accountability. Nothing had happened. And the thing that really brought it to my attention was that when Audrey and I have traveled, we've stopped at the council or the chamber office, picked up some of the brochures that they made out, and I want to tell you that they are beautiful brochures. They're well made. They're something that are really, really nice. And I've tried to carry some on the car, and when we go places, we usually drop those brochures off. And most places that we stop are very receptive to them because of the quality of the product. But the first time I went by, I asked for a half a dozen or so, and that's what they gave me. And a few months later, I went by and said I'd like to have a half a dozen more. And instead of getting a half a dozen, I was brought out two large bundles of these brochures. And I never really thought too much about it right at the moment. And then later on I got to thinking, man, these are what, about a year, year and a half old or something like that. They're really beautiful and they really do what I think is a good job of promoting Lapine. And I was thinking, I wonder if they kind of pushed off two of these bundles on me, I wonder how many still there. And my concern was, if we go out and spend a lot of money for these beautiful brochures, and they sat in an office here in the chamber, they're not doing the job that they were intended to do. And I was wondering how much had been spent to make the brochures and what their distribution process was. Because Audrey and I stopped at one of the centers up in Bend, they didn't even have any of those brochures. We went in, I had a handful, I only had about six or seven with me that day. I went in and showed them to the girl behind the desk and I said, I'm from Lapine and I'd like to know if you would please put some of these brochures out. And I couldn't believe the comments I got. They thought they were beautiful and really represented the city, and they were happy for it when she said, if you come up next time, bring some more. So I mean, they're very receptive. But my point is that all along we should have been getting reports. Now, I don't blame anybody because I probably share as much blame as anybody else. I'm sure that if you go through the records, you'll find that there are some of these checks to the chamber that I signed. And when I signed those checks, I did not ask for a report. So, like I say, I share as much blame as anybody else. But it's my opinion that there was a contract. In that contract, it stated that there should be a report. And I, as a counselor, am requesting a report from the chamber on how that money was spent.
Thank you, Don. Any comments? Staff?
Well, we're glad to oblige. And I got to tell you that in my dealings with the chamber, and I've talked to them back and forth half a dozen times, let's say, over the last month, they're really receptive to providing us anything we ask for. And again, our relationship, I believe, with the chamber, the Tourism Bureau, is good. Yes, I think maybe the reporting has been a little lax. But again, we're going to shore it up with a contract, and I've got their assurances that they will follow the reporting relationship. But if in addition to that, the council would direct that that they provide us with an update of how those monies were spent as a previous year, I'll be glad to ask them for that information.
I would like one comment I would like to make is that this is no reflection on the chamber, and I don't mean it to be a reflection on the chamber. I've been a supporter of the chamber ever since I've been on the council, and I feel that they've done a great job representing the city of La Pine. So this isn't with any animosity at all. All on my part is I just like to see the contract fulfilled.
Is there a consensus of the council that we have the city manager request a report of how the TRT monies were spent for last year?
Yes. Go
ahead.
Yeah, I go along.
There's consensus that that the staff. Proceed with that.
We will provide that to your next meeting.
Are we also going to see the contract brought to the council?
Yes, that will be brought back at the next meeting.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
And a sewer and water transition update.
Okay, well, I'll start. And you know, we call it a transition. It's been a whirlwind. Every day, every moment of every day, there is something actively being pursued to assure the seamless transition of the sewer and water districts, city. And I must say, we've had excellent cooperation from the sewer and water district staff and from the commissioners and their attorney and our attorney. But it's very laborious. You cannot believe all the details. Like, for instance, with our USDA loan, it has to be transferred. There are loans over there with the district. Those need to be transferred over here. And there is an incredible amount of paperwork. So we've been working through that. We plan to meet with staff, the sewer and water district staff, on Monday at 9, and sort of two focuses. One, I'm sure they have any number of questions about the transfer and how that might affect them or affect their job duties or, you know, how it's different over here than over there. And our goal, of course, is not to change policies any more than we have to between the sewer district and the water district. City, you know, if we make for policy changes, we'll make for them as we have some knowledge base about how they might want to be changed. The other thing we want to talk to the staff about is come July 2nd, that's what we're aiming for, is to have that whole operation over here. And I think realistically, a portion of the operation will still be over with the sewer and the water districts come July 2nd. We'll probably be in kind of be doing a two-step for a while. Hopefully not very long. I mean, our goal would be to close down the sewer and the water district operation and obligations as quickly as possible. They still have some reporting relationships and responsibilities that will extend past July 1st or 2nd. And there is still a need to have some kind of a knowledge base back and forth between the sewer and the water and the city after July 1. But we want to start the test drive of this transfer process July 1st, if that's possible. And that's what we're aiming for as we speak. Yeah, but there's still some unanswered questions and still a number of little things that need to be resolved, like post office boxes and, you know, software programs and credit cards and, you know, general liabilities and closing out accounts and that sort of stuff. But that's our aim. Okay. And I don't see any resistance to that occurring, other than the resistance is just inherent in the transfer process.
Sir? You know, we'd answer any questions, I guess, that you guys have. You know, they should start kicking up in your minds. This is the transition has been a marathon, certainly not a sprint. It's been going on for 2 years. So, you know, lots happened on and off over that 2 years, but we're down now to, you know, a couple weeks. So we need to, we're kind of changing gears a little bit. Lots of attorneys, lots of agreements, lots of you name it. And as you get down here, then, you know, there's lots of devil in the details. And people tend to put that stuff off until you have to. That's human nature, I guess, or, you know, and just the history of this event. So we're trying to work through all of those. And there's all kinds of issues. And I'd say, I mean, most of them are 99% of them aren't confidential. It's just, I'm not going to sit here and ramble on. So you guys, you know, things that pop up in your mind, ask.
Kathy?
I'm just wondering if there's going to be a letter coming out soon, if it does transfer over on the 2nd, where will public be sending or mailing payments? Is that going to change right away?
No, I mean,
it'll just
I think the thing overall in that whole category of things is, if we take over on the 1st, on July 3rd, you can come in here, and if you write Lapine Water District on the check, it will be deposited and you will be credited. If you mail it to the post office box that they've been mailing it to for 20 years, Ashley or somebody will go down and open up that mailbox and bring the mail. If you mail it to our post office box, we'll get it. If you come in our front door, we will get it. If you drop it in the box over there, we will get it, because we will have key to the box. I mean, so it really, lots of these things take a month, a year. In other words, if someone made out to the Lapine Sewer District 6 months from now, we'll cash it. So of course, what we'll do is, we've talked, we'll put a letter out and all that, but still, lots of people will continue to just have it. All kinds of stuff, they will continue for months. And so it won't matter if it's mailed here or there. We make it out to, it'll go into the appropriate funds and for the appropriate uses. Good question.
I think Lori also wants to add 2 cents worth too. Oh, okay. There's a question. We might answer the question. That's why you know she's got.
Let's move across the councilors, Dan.
You know, you may have given this piece of information, but I don't remember for sure. What's the status of the USDA loan assumption, and is there, when this happened, there's not like a deed transfer like with real estate or something. How does it formally occur?
Kind of is like real estate, really, in a sense. We'll be assuming title to the assets. Okay. The current station will be transferred to the city of La Pina. We've actually had a title company do the title report just like you would if you were buying it. And of course, just like it's not unusual in private transactions, you will know you find it a little different, but you'll find that they got the title company can only find 4 sites when there's 5. One never was recorded, or they don't have, you know, it's those kind of things. So that's the stuff from a legal title standpoint we've been working on to make sure that all of the properties that are out there, the little pump houses you see at Wiki Up and all of that, there's title to these. That I think we have figured out now. We worked on all the equipment, but basically it's a buy, sell, transfer of assets from cash to land to backhoes, and the city will have title to those. So as far as USDA, what we really had to do is, because you have to get the bondholders to agree that we're a good credit risk, because they have the districts, and people went out theoretically and said, oh, we're comfortable financing this, the districts, and this is their income, and this is their expenses, and we have a reasonable expectation we're going to be repaid, and so on. Well, now where a new entity comes along, it's kind of, again, almost like real estate. You've got to make sure this person you're selling to is going to make the payments. And that's what, you know, we've been working through. Even though the income transfers and all of that, so we've had these bonding council, which we probably will have spent $25,000 with, because the bondholders have to be, and that's all very technical, legal type stuff. The bonding folks are fine with it now. We've worked through all of that. Interestingly, the federal government didn't sell the bonds. The bonds are to the federal government. It's not a third party. It's not the bank. It's actually the USDA holds the paper to this. You know, an example, just as a little, Lori and I today we're talking. She's working on it tonight and in the morning quick. I mean, you know, this week's issue is, you have to have reserves for the loan payments, and there's percentages. You have to collect 10% reserve per year, up to 10 years of reserves. They really want you to have about a year of payment set aside, so you had an extra year ahead. But they don't make you do that all in the first year you start. So they've been building up this reserve fund. And they have short-term asset funds and all these things, your reservoirs and things that wear out, pumps that don't last 30 years, like a pipe. So they've got all of these kind of depreciation schedules. Well, the districts and their budget, you'll remember you guys just approved it. We had just inserted the district's water and sewer budget. And they put capital reserve, $300,000. Well, now we're coming along and it's 10 years later and, you know, different people look at things. Well, they don't like that being just $300,000. It exceeds the reserve requirement. So today at 4 o'clock, you know, it's, well, we need to take the $300,000 and break it down to, you know, $149,000 is reserved for loan 102. These are fake numbers. $20,000 is for short-term assets. You know, so we'll have to add that into the budget. Same dollar figure, but they want to be able to just open the budget and see that line item. Now, for 10 years, it's been perfectly fine, and the district's budget is $300,000. So that's the stuff that you do daily. And it's just bringing things up to current. You know, we're a new borrower, so they have new questions. There are no problems. From a legal standpoint, there are no problems. Now, can it get approved and through their system? That's out of our control.
So the all of these various deed transfers and all of that, is it like an escrow and all of that sits there and it finalizes at some point all at one time, or do things sort of trickle across?
I don't think that stuff's going to trickle, and I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure, so I won't answer that.
Yeah. Just curiosity is about how it technically transfers and gets... It sounds like there's a possibility that we may function as management before some of that actually transfers.
It's possible. This is and I did talk to the mayor about it and to the city manager this last week, or whenever it was, everything runs together, but maybe it was earlier this week. We might see a double date. It could be that operationally the folks start more working for the city, but paid by the districts, say beginning in late June, the 1st of July. So there's kind of operations. So when the customer comes, they would still come here and pay. Again, they write that check, and Ashley keys it in. If Ashley's gone, Patty keys it in. If Patty and Ashley are gone, Lori keys it in, and I'm not sure we'll get Steve trained on.
I don't think they'd want me to touch the money.
But so we could end up with kind of a two-phase. One is operationally, which is really the more important.
Yeah.
When you walk into a place and pay a bill, you don't really know who writes the paycheck to that employee. It could be some subsidiary. It doesn't really matter to you. So we really, you look at this as the ownership, the USDA, who owns the loan, you know, and all of those things. But the real issue is operationally. You want to make sure that the person is taken care of when they walk in the door, that their payment is recorded properly, and if they have an issue with their bill, you can handle it. That is what we got to make sure we do right, and that will actually then be seamless. Then all of a sudden on August 1st, if the technical ownership of the pipe changes, there is nobody out there cares.
Yeah.
It could be the 20th of July, you know.
Yeah.
So that's what you know. Is it going to be July 1st? Is it going to be July 15th or July 20th or August 1st? But I think what Steve said operationally, we definitely want to make that transition prior to July, I think, so that people start, so that we then are around it. You hear the discussions in the lobby. You know, Patty will learn just by listening to the conversation 5 feet away, you know, and rather than trying to do it cold turkey. I think that's where we've slip back a little, is making sure that it's figured out from the operational side. And yet that's where our problem will be. Ownership, nobody in town cares.
Yeah.
Studio.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm leaving.
Where are we at with the program? The program, your billing system, your...
You have a staff report that was left in your yellow folder about the conversion.
Yeah, I got that tonight, and I haven't had time to read it.
Oh, okay. Well, the staff report is that presently we are in the throes of the conversion, and I've been working with Cassell. We are going to be transmitting the data tomorrow to them for the city. Presently, Donna came by today and gave me her QuickBooks backup so I could send that to Cassell as well. They will be writing routines and testing the data. And then it's just a matter of making sure everything is integral. And we will be hopefully up and running by the 1st of July. Live. That's my goal, at least with the city. With water and sewer, we're going to have to buy QuickBooks 2012 because that's what we run on. Ours is Pro 2011. So we're going to have to buy some software or get theirs over here, but they've only got one license per water and then one per sewer. So I guess we're going to have to figure that out, because I cannot access the backup because we cannot read up. Programs usually read down, but they don't read up. So that's where we are with that. And we're going to have to need that part. As far as how we transfer the Neptune and the Continental over here so that it runs, we have yet to have that discussion, but from my contact with Neptune, it's no problem. They can just come over here and train us how to do that for like $50 or something.
So, you expect no problems, and all of this should take place in 30 days.
That's my hope.
And if it doesn't go smooth?
You can plan for the best and just, you know, work the details.
Okay. But I would encourage you to do it ASAP. Mm-hmm. And try to avoid any bugs that are in the transfer, because believe, things go wrong.
Stu, just so everyone's clear, the public utility, public works side of this, we are not making any changes in July. See, what will happen is, Ashley was here today, we're going to load Ashley's computer up and bring it over here, and it's going to be in the Continental system, and the Neptune system talks to it today. We could be using that in September and October. So, because what they do now is, they have a billing software system, and say it says that they took in $100 today. They manually go enter that into QuickBooks. Mm-hmm. There is no talking between them. What Lori's talking about is, instead of QuickBooks, we will have Cassell city software for the accounting side. So from a logistical thing, sewer, water, utility payments, we will key it in on Tuesday the same way she keys it in the day before she moves here, into the same program. That is seamless. And then after we're good at that, and they're good at Cassell, you then go by and you do the switching over of the Cassell systems. And I don't know when they anticipate that. I wouldn't say you want to screw. You need to learn. Yeah, I would phase that, because the current Continental system works. We don't have to have that done in
July. We'll buy Cassell after the first of the year, because that's when we have designated the funds for the water and sewer billing, not until the next fiscal year. So that was the plan when we signed the contracts for Cassell, was to first buy the city module, and then after the acquisition of water and sewer, then we would buy that module from Cassell and implement it as we went along.
Thank you.
Anything else?
I think we wanted to talk about the audit too.
The other discussion that we need to have briefly is that I got a call from...
Comments? Do you have any comments?
I have a report.
Do you have a comment?
Yeah, I'd like to make comments first. So the basic idea is that we will take operational control on the 1st of July. Mm-hmm. And it sort of floats around in my head about the fact that, you know, our the council policy was that we would be doing this all on the 1st of July. So now really what we are faced with is that we're going to do operational control on the 1st of July. And what is it that will not, that may interfere with taking legal control. Is that just the USDA part?
That's correct.
Okay.
When we, well, first of all, they have the lien. I mean, they have a lien. They will not allow. It'd be like if you just can't go sell somebody's asset that the lien holder doesn't agree to. You know, so they won't sign off on it coming to us until they're done. So therefore, you couldn't go clear title to get title. But also in our agreements with when we have told the USDA, we will not go out and force, in other words, do it until they're done. But they also, I think, Mr. Mayor, that's just a contingency. It could be the 15th. It could very well be done. According to Pam Swires Day, the only thing she's waiting for is this little breakdown that we'll have done by noon tomorrow. Now, you know, her bosses in Portland are well aware and they've been following it. The loan's already out there. So, you know, they very well will have that baby back here. And I'm just saying it could be.
Yeah. And really what I meant by all that was the fact that was really what we understood at that last meeting where we said, you know, when we decided that, well, or we went through the process of, well, what if it doesn't happen on one June? And that was all discussed. So basically that's a straightforward answer, that it totally depends on USDA's saying, okay, you can now do it.
I think what we're trying to say too is that to the customer, it is July 1.
Right.
Or June 25th. But July 1 for sure, that they will start paying here and coming here. And again, whether or not the money that you pay is deposited into a current district bank account for another week, or it goes into a Citibank account, doesn't matter. So operationally, it's going to be here the 1st of July. Title ownership transfers could be subsequent from that, because we were having trouble getting our arms around this floating date. You can't do this with this floating date. So, and sewer we could take now. I mean, we could take sewer July 1, because right. It has no USDA loan.
Right.
Well, you can't run the place half sewer, half water. I mean, that doesn't work.
Is there a plan to establish a date that we've heard talk about, you know, their staff is going to move over here, or portions of their staff is going to move over here before 30 June, start gearing up and working out of here and doing that. Is this this meeting on the 18th? I heard something about a meeting on the 18th.
Right. Monday,
is that when that's
9.
Going to be discussed and,
yeah,
and some date's going to be agreed to?
Well, I want to hear what they have to say, but that's going to be my aim from the meeting is, look, what will it take for us to be operational over here seamlessly come the 2nd of July? Because the 2nd is a Monday.
And I think you're talking about two different meetings, though. I think.
Well, you said you're having a meeting on the 18th of June with them.
With the staff, correct.
Right. Okay.
So
their boards meet Tuesday.
Yeah, and then their boards meet subsequent.
Right. Okay.
But just trying to, on the one hand, address any issues that they might have. On the other hand, sort of lay out the, you know, okay, you folks are smart, you've been doing this job. What's it going to take to accomplish it so that it's seamless and that we protect the public interest and we have good customer satisfaction? And, you know, if there's some issues, you know, there might be, then find out what they are so they can be cured. But again, that's our goal, and that's why we're meeting and talking with the staff instead of saying, okay, well, somehow magically and mysteriously come the 1st of July, then we'll do it. We want to rehearse now, so during that rehearsal period, if there's a bug, we can identify it and we can resolve it.
But I'm asking if in fact if the ownership changes on the 1st of July, if the first time Ashley's over here is July 1st, there is no training period. So that's why I keep saying in our conference call that we had, you know, basically even the district's attorney, not the district attorney, that their attorney, he was like, you know, ooh, get it going, you know. So, you know, remember, there is no trial period right now, it still is July 1st is the date. So if someone isn't over here a week or two ahead of that, there is no trial period. So I think that's something we need to be aware of. As I, Stu, you're kind of, you're thinking plan for several contingencies.
Yeah.
And I very much agree with that.
And that's really the idea is that it does become more seamless if we've got them, the staff over here, they've geared up, they've got through phone call problems, they've got through computer hookup problems and all that kind of stuff. And it's almost not even obvious to the users that there has been a change. They're doing what they're doing, and minor difference in where the checks go to, maybe, or whatever. But I think that's important. And so if USDA comes along on the 10th day of July, and we've done the operational piece, and then we're looking at when can we, you know, it's not done yet. So USDA says on the 10th, are we looking at saying, okay, on that date, we're going to take it legally, or is there a plan to wait? I mean, are we trying to set a date out there that says, okay, we won't try to get into gear after finding out today or tomorrow. We'll just wait through until...
Well, I would think, I would talk about Steve that question, but I would assume if it isn't the first, you're going to then go pick a date. There's no point. You don't want to run around and all of a sudden they send you the letter on Thursday and you do it Friday. I mean, so...
Okay.
Because the wages and different things, in other words, all switch upon the ownership change. And so, for a lot of reasons, I think you pick a date out there. You know, so if we got it on the 10th of July, I would say you probably wait till July 31st, the end of the pay period,
sure.
For obvious reasons, insurance, all kinds of stuff.
Okay.
So we'll know, I think once you move it, you probably move it a month in reality, don't you think?
Yeah. Okay. I want to say this, that there's no dilly-dallying on our part, because we know just as soon as this thing is over here operational and running, we got 10 dozen things right behind it that need to be over here and running too. So we want to clear the house of this item, so we move on to the next item on our list. And we have a lot of them. So we're going to be chugging along for a long time.
Okay.
Next week we're having a special meeting, Wednesday. Remember, we set that back, and we may meet every Wednesday this month, but we're hopefully not the last one. But next Wednesday, which is 20th?
Wednesday is the 20th.
Okay, you will get your agenda. Usually get them on Thursday. And what that is, mostly it's all resolutions and ordinances, and that's where we've coordinated. We have to approve city ordinances and resolutions that authorize us to charge a fee for water, sewer, disconnect, all the policies, because the city doesn't have a fee. So what we've done is we've taken all of their ordinances and resolutions, and then I get a request about every 2 hours for a different one, but then online, if you print them off the districts online, they're not signed, and you know, again, it's all that little technical thing. We can't go off of an unsigned ordinance. An unsigned ordinance isn't a law, because it could have been a draft. So, yes, just today, in fact, I sent another one that we had to trace down, signed. But those are all complete, and you will be getting a lot of ordinances that refer to district ordinances. So it'll be a city ordinance that says, you know, we refer to their ordinance, and that becomes an attachment. And where it says district means city, because there's say district. And that's what you're going to see. And so we'll do that in about 3 votes next Wednesday, because we're combining a bunch of stuff. The law firm has been working. This is uncharted ground. The law firm, you're going to get a big law bill, first of all. So don't anyone, maybe already it's in there.
And that's not uncharted waters.
Jeremy and Melissa and Paul Taylor, they've had, you know, have really been working on this. And we've got so many different angles going. So plan for that. And then Tuesday, the districts are meeting at 10 o'clock, special.
5 o'clock.
5 o'clock on Tuesday night. The regular meeting will be here. And I think, you know, any of you that can attend, should attend. There's a labor ratification of a union labor agreement on the agenda. So that's, you know, something I know will be of interest to all of you.
Okay. Anything else? Lori?
There's another item that we need to talk about that relates to water and sewer. Since their year end is 6/30/2012, and by the time that their audit, which will cover that period, will probably not occur until August. The staff has been contacted by their auditor, Candy Franck, with Harrington Franck and Price, I think it is. And I actually saw her yesterday again at the Community Professional Education class that I went to. And her concern is that will there be anyone around from the district that can sign the rep letter or the representation letter that management is required to give the auditor, stating that they have been, that the auditor has been given all of a long list of things, and that they have knowledge of the background and the detail that is in the financial statements and in the detail of the records. Steve and I have spoken about this, and the question is, could I sign this rep letter in good faith, knowing these elements? And I hesitate to say yes to that because I can't really vouch for it, because I don't know the details of what's gone into the water and sewer financials. So I guess there is a question as to who should do the audit, and then will there be anybody around that can sign that representation letter, be it Donna or one of the council or commissioners or not. So I pose that question to you all to have dialogue.
My thoughts about that is just it's something that needs to be discussed with sewer and water. I mean, that's an issue for them to deal with. Because yeah, they're not going away.
Yeah, I mean, that will be worked through. We have lots of those issues. So, in other words, I mean, right off the cuff, which, because I haven't talked to you about this, Candy Franck, are they in the middle of a three-year agreement with her, or?
Year to year.
Okay, which means she hasn't been hired to do anything yet. So who knows if she's even going to be doing an audit. We can't hire her to do their audit. So she has no standing at this point. But also, while they might want that letter signed, we got our auditors, oh gosh, I think I hired them in October, November. I mean, we had never signed anything with them until then. And you know, in other words, these are the things that will go on for months. The audits are usually done in October, November, or December.
August.
Well, we've had some not done in August, so.
Well, I think that was what she planned to do it.
Well, but she's not, she has no contract to do the audit. Yeah. So we have no idea if she's doing audit. I mean, if we're gonna, what we will do is have it put in with the city auditor and the firm that we hire. That's just an added on part of it. So I think that those types of issues, that's an example of how do you shut the districts down. That's another one we're working on. How do you dissolve? And that's being worked on. So that's really a legal question. And Christy Munson and I and Jeremy have discussed the audit. But that's kind of like right now, that's what we're trying to do is work on June issues, and then we're going to work on July issues, and then we'll work on August issues. Because you can't get your arms around this gorilla, you know. And so, yes, the districts will have to do a closing audit, and that will get worked out.
I think it's obvious that that's something that'll come down the road. It'll get worked out, yeah. And we'll move on. Unless there's further comment around this, I'll move to other matters.
While we're still on the subject, and this falls under other matters, but yesterday the sewer and the water districts met, and they have been laboring on a water rate study for some time, just to get a handle on whether or not the fees and charges are appropriate, and also trying to just look at the resources in general and do some resource management and allocation methods and fairness of distribution of fees. And so they had an excellent slideshow presentation, and I was able to procure a copy of that today, and I just wanted to share it with you so that you can, at your convenience, gain an understanding of where they are in the rate structure process. And as that comes to the city, it'll probably be modified, because we spoke yesterday, Mayor and I did, to this issue, and we talked a little bit about conservation and also about water rights and things of that nature, because water is a very important resource. So read this, and then I have a couple copies here for the public, or we can make copies available to the public so you can understand what's going on with the rate study. And in general, about water distribution, customer use of water, and they have it broken down 52 different ways. So any way you want to know about water, how much water is used per year by commercial people, or how much water is used per year by residential, or your top 10 users of water, or the percentage of water for residential versus commercial, all that stuff is known. Okay? So that is one item on my checklist. So just check that off. I think the next thing I'd like to call your attention is that we've been approached by the Pine Bend School District about honoring one of their employees, Patricia Yeager. And I know that the city has already started some process complimentary to recognize her. And I just wanted to provide you, first of all, just a bio on her. If you haven't seen this before, this gives you a little bit of information about Patricia Yeager.
Thank you.
And why I call this to your attention is that we have a request to name one of our streets after her, and so I wanted to bring that to you for your consideration, whether or not you wanted to honor Ms. Yeager for her years of public service by renaming, and it would be Pine Street. And let me tell you a little bit about Pine Street, sir.
As far as I know, it's always been Reese. R-E-A-S-E, Reese Street.
Okay, is it? Oh, excuse me, you're right. I'm on the other side. There's this. Get it right. It is Reese Street. I do apologize. Reese Street is a short street that is on the west side of the elementary school that fronts on Burgess. It doesn't continue southward. It has no place to go because Huntington would cut it off at some point. It doesn't operationally go across into the Cable neighborhood. It won't. So I don't see this road ever being anything more than a short stub street that accommodates the school and possibly at some future date a little bit of the new neighborhood as it develops. And so the request is to rename Reese Street to Yeager or Yeager Way in honor of her years of service. And I just wanted to let you know that if that was something that you thought was appropriate, here would be sort of the protocol for doing that. First of all, I checked, there doesn't appear to be any legal issues associated with the city taking that action. And I've also looked at in terms of land use, if there are any land use prescriptions or constraints, and there does not appear to be any. And as I point out, the road does not connect through, nor does it align with any roadway in the Cable subdivision. If you're receptive to this, then probably what the city would have to do, there's three or four steps. First, we would need to confirm there's not another street name that is similar in nature as to cause confusion, because this we don't want any duplication of street names or duplications or pronunciations or spellings of another street in proximity for health safety reasons. Then we would, if the council approved this, we would want to notify all property owners in proximity, the post office, emergency services, county assessor, the coroner, GIS folks, so that everybody was aware of the new name. We'd also want to check with state statutes to make sure there wasn't something out there that we didn't anticipate. And this would be on the advice of council, that we should develop a street naming policy. So then I would be bringing back a street naming policy that would probably kind of articulate this protocol we'd be rehearsing in this instance if you determine that you'd like to move forward with that action. So it's in your court.
Sort of have a consensus that this is what we wanted to do?
You called me on the phone, and I thought it was great.
Yeah, I thought at some point in time we discussed the proclamation and the street naming. If not, then I would ask. We did.
I remember talking about it.
Yeah. Well, I'd just like to ask at this point a consensus that this is the council's desire to proceed in this fashion.
I thought it was already approved.
I kind of did too.
I think.
Okay.
Consensus.
There's a consensus that the city manager moves forward on making this happen.
Okay.
I do have a quick question.
Yes, sir.
Do you know the history of how it became Reese Street?
No, I don't.
I don't know if somebody, some city father back a ways, or,
It is a pioneer family.
It's a pioneer family. Are we going to offend somebody there?
Likely.
Okay, well, named it. The county?
I don't know.
County.
I support, I like the idea of doing this. I just think that's something we need to be considerate of. If somebody changed Barco Road up there in Plainview, I would jump up and down a little bit.
Oh, I understand. No, and again, that's why I bring it, that's why it's a policy decision.
Stu?
Just a thought at 7:40, whatever, if that's the correct time. I was going to suggest, because currently Lapine has an old Main Street. Does anyone know where it's at?
Oh, yeah. South Valley Bank moving toward the park and rec area.
Okay.
So it's on the west side. It's that little street on the west side of
what? 500 feet long?
Maybe.
Okay. Because I think, is it going to be Jaeger or Patricia Jaeger?
Jaeger Way.
Jaeger Way to the school, and then move Reese over to that other old Main Street, because there's nothing, I shouldn't say nothing, but it's a street that goes nowhere.
Yeah.
And is it a city street, though? Is it not a county street or a private street, but it's a, we know for certain it's a public city street?
I think it's been vacated, but I know Second Street has been vacated, which is the only access to the Main Street as it is, but...
It's something if staff could look into.
I can look into it, but if it's vacated, it probably have to be unvacated in order to give it a name, I would think.
I think I'd like to have a comment here along the lines of, I think the city manager could go and look at the history of how Reese got named. I mean, when the school was built last year and opened, the county assigned a name. I don't know if the county was petitioned that here's a good name from a previous family, or they just said, hey, this is a way to, this is a good name for that street because there isn't another one around. And we're actually only looking at a name that has been there for not even 2 years. So I think the city or the city manager could look into that and either come back or establish that there's not going to be a problem of much.
Okay. Well, I'll look at both ways.
Okay.
One is there any issue with the family that have the name? Because again, if they've been honored, we certainly don't want to unhonor them by providing some other honor. I mean, that doesn't make any sense at all. The other thing is that if in fact that's going to be an issue, and I'll see if I can't come up with yet another street where it's a city street, there's no legal issues with it, and then I'll bring you something back for your consideration.
We'll await a report.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Stay tuned to this channel. And I just have a few more things.
If Portman does this Reese, if they would, you're going to find them a pothole filled dirt street. You know, it matters. We named after our former mayors. The council did it. Of course, I would have never done it. My name is already on a street. It's paved. But they took the historical older mayors from the 60s and stuff, and they named three streets. They're dead end, dirt streets with trailers on it full of potholes. And I always go by that and I say, wasn't that a nice way to honor your former mayors? And that's what they did.
Are just while he's thinking about what he's going to be saying, are they alive?
They were.
They're in the fill in the pothole.
They were alive until they saw the street.
Please proceed.
All right, the next thing is we've just received an opportunity for a grant. All right, and I just wanted to say what it was, and I was going to give each of you a copy of this. There is a $50,000 grant that's available for a special city allotment fund. We have to act on this grant application by August 1st, which I'm sure we could do. The purpose of this grant is to assist cities in repairing or reconstructing city streets or sidewalks which are inadequate for the capacity they serve or in a condition detrimental to the city. And the street must be under ownership, jurisdiction, and control of the city. The same thing about having to be named after a mayor. Applications may be submitted for bicycle and pedestrian projects, but the proposed improvements should conform to the state bicycle and pedestrian plan. A good method of selection is to have several people drive over and examine the city streets and pick a street which best complies with the guidelines and satisfies the laws. We recommend you compare several streets before making the final selection. So I thought I'd give you each one of these so you could see what the criteria is. And then if you would, either yourself or in talking with others, determine what city street or sidewalk would best is most suitable for some kind of remedy this year. I'm going to be passing these out also tomorrow to our Public Works Committee. The public is welcome to have a copy of this. And the goal is, if I've got 10 or 12 people out looking around, somebody's going to come up with that road or that sidewalk that if we were to compete for these monies, we'd have a nice competitive project and we'd see yet another improvement in our city.
Okay. And I'd like to make a comment about that while he's passing this out. You know, we've talked several times about the street there on Morrison and 4th Street, which flanks, there's an intersection there, and it flanks the Prairie House, and they continually complain about the fact that it's dangerous crossing that Morrison there to get across the street and down toward Huntington so they can go to the post office and the senior center and Bi-Mart. So there's a candidate.
Okay, well, great.
Thank you.
All right, I'll make one for William Foss. I just had this afternoon a child getting off the bus, walking down the bog line, and a semi coming up, and the semi having to go into the opposite lane of traffic to go around the child with no sidewalk. And there's a lot of children in that area.
All right. Well, I'm sure that I'd ask you to all put your thinking caps on. And again, I'll ask Public Works tomorrow. And the public is welcome to put your thinking caps on too and help us here. And so we have a competitive, and boy, that just jumps out at us as something that can be resolved, and $50,000 will go a long way toward its resolution. So keep that in mind too. It can be, you know, $50,000 doesn't go very far.
Yeah. One question you talked about, you know, it had to be a street, city street.
Yes, sir.
So I'll say that we have streets in town that are actually county streets.
A majority of our streets in town are county streets. So if there's any question or doubt, and this goes for the public, and maybe I should have provided this as well, but we have a really nice illustrative map from earlier this year that's in color that identifies all the city streets and all the county streets and all the private streets within our community, so that you can see which ones are city streets and thus those that are eligible for these proceeds.
I didn't quite understand what you when you commented about that, you said something about a city street or controlled by the city. I'm just wondering if...
I would think that it would be a city street.
Okay.
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 Just forget the control stuff and just say a city street.
Okay.
All right. And why don't I do this tomorrow? I will email all of you a copy of that map so that you can look it over as you're thinking about where it is that you'd like to see some improvement with those monies.
Works for me.
Okay. All right. Just a few more things. I met yesterday with Tom Anderson and Nick Lelak, and Tom Anderson is the Community Development Director for Deschutes County, and Nick Lelak is the Planning Director. And we discussed the planning IGA. We have an interlocal agreement with Deschutes County whereby they provide for planning services in our city until such time as we have the authority to provide for that service. And they wanted to call to my attention that that IGA is about to expire and that they're receptive to continuing it until such time as we assume that authority. And so I would be bringing you back an IGA, just generally just an update of what we've done prior, just so that we have continuous planning services until such times as we're ready to provide for that. So that was more or less just a note. Another important thing, I'm just about done, is that we're going to have some angry mosquitoes starting today, because we have a contract and we were advised today that they're starting spraying today, and the contract applies to all mosquitoes less than 20 pounds in weight. So a majority of them, this will attend to. And the goal is that every Wednesday, three times in June, which would be essentially all of our Wednesdays, and four Wednesdays in July, which would be all but one, and two times in August, that they would go out. We have 31 miles of streets in our city, to include county streets, and they would be spraying all of them. And we also have a question and answer sheet. It has basic questions if you've got concerns about the mosquito program or how it might affect you or impair you or whatever. We've got that available. We will be providing that to people that call and have questions. But we're hoping that this action will address our mosquito problems, except for the real big guys. Okay. Let's see what else have I got. I want to hand this out to you. Everybody's been asking about First and Reed and Highway 97. And, you know, what's the current status? And it is going to be a couple years before that intersection is adjusted in its entirety and it's signalized. But the ODOT is planning for any number of smaller improvements in proximity to that intersection, and they have a sheet that enumerates those, but they also have a nice picture. And so I just wanted to pass out what they plan pictorially to do. Oh, you have it? Okay. Okay, and you have it? And you have it?
No.
Okay. And the public is welcome to these too, that reflect changes that are anticipated this summer so as to make that intersection safer until such times as the improvement can conclude. Okay, and let's see what else. And one final
quick question, Steve, on that.
Yes, sir.
What, when you're coming from the north, heading south, there's this proposed line, ODOT sign says Industrial Park Cemetery, left turn.
Uh-huh.
Coming from the south toward the north, there's a sign that says cemetery, but doesn't say Industrial Park. Why wouldn't we send people down to the Industrial Park if they're going north?
We want to keep it a secret.
I noticed that on there. Right?
Okay, well, we probably don't. That's the answer.
Well, you know, I figured that maybe they thought, well, the people coming from Klamath Falls or whatever.
Careful.
No, I mean, the business comes from this direction. Is what I, because I saw that and I thought.
Yeah. Maybe that's a question to ask them.
Or they also just made an error.
Yeah, we
could. I think that, you know, being that we want more jobs and more industry here, I think that we should
ask them.
Yeah, please.
Yep. There you go.
Okay. All right.
Don't just ask them to die here. Ask them to work here.
I might note that one of the things they plan to do this summer, something they haven't done, and or I understand it will be brand new, as you're coming southbound on 97 toward First Street, there's a speed limit sign that says 35, and then likewise as you're going northbound on 97 away from First Street, There's one across the street that says 45 miles an hour. They're planning to put a little electronic devices below those speed signs that identify what your speed is as you go by that location, to help people focus in not just on the speed limit signs, but what you are actually doing in the way of a speed relative to that sign. And they're thinking that will help considerably at this location. And they're kind of excited that's a new whistle and bell for them, and we'll see how that works out for our public.
That's the first ones in Central Oregon.
Yep, that's my understanding.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then finally, the youth. We've talked about trying to get the youth to be have a partnership with the city, because they're one of our most important assets. Recently, the athletic director, and I will mispronounce his name, but it is Rusty
Zizek.
Okay. He set up a meeting with the leadership class at Lapine High School. And the leadership class is comprised of students from all the four grades, smart, attentive, bright kids. And I just went over and I said, look, you know, the way the generally government works is, you know, we just kind of figure out what your needs are and then try and accommodate it. But we know that you have needs and they may not be met, and we'd like to foster a partnership with you, and would you consider having a relationship with us, and as part of that relationship then identify what your needs are. And they said they were just very kind, and they had all kinds of questions, and they planned to come up with some ideas and share those with the council. And so I thought that was very positive. Okay. That's my report, and I thank you very much.
Thank you. At this time, I'll ask for public comments. Hearing none, we'll move forward. Committee reports. Kathy, you have any committee reports?
No, sir.
Don, do you have any committee reports?
I've been going to COIC for about 2.5 years, and during that time I have supposed to have been giving COIC the wishes from Lapine, and you know, sometimes I have trouble with that because I come back and give a report and the council doesn't give me any direction. And I think also that many of us in the city and on the council have no idea what COIC is, how many, what the component is, and they're working with a $20 million budget. And all of this money comes from you, the taxpayers. And I have a status report from COIC, and I asked to have one put in everybody's packet. Was that done, Patty?
I thought it was.
Pardon?
Should have been done.
It was or wasn't?
I'm not sure.
Okay. It is? Okay. Well, the idea of that is that everybody can take a look at it, see what COIC does, what it stands for, and how much it impacts our community. The next thing is, you'll remember the last council meeting that I attended right after I'd been to a COIC meeting, I told you that the state is looking for funding, stable funding, for the transportation system. And I passed out, I believe, an item where we were supposed to send back our recommendations or what the city would like to see as stable funding. And I discussed that with our city manager, and one of the things that he came up with is, well, we've earmarked $20,000 to extend the bike trail the full time. Well, that's fine, but it doesn't help in the funding that they've got. So in your packet too, there'd be two little one-page sheets. One is public transit action eliminating transit fares. And this is what Corvallis, Oregon does, how they obtain the money to run their transit system, and everybody rides free. And the other one is something that you probably should be a little bit concerned about. At the last COIC meeting, they authorized researching the possibility of selling bonds for stable transportation funding. And if that's done, that means that the bond will be actually guaranteed by the taxpayers to do it. So in talking with our city manager, he says that that's an involved process, but just the fact that they are spending money to see that that it's feasible and legal with that entity is something that we should be concerned about. So what I would like you to do as a counselor is to kind of look these things over and give me your ideas as to what sort of funding you feel that I should go back to COIC and say that's recommended by the city of Lapine. I don't feel it's right for me to make a decision and say this is what Lapine thinks if I don't have some consensus from the council. So that's my report.
Are you going to pass those out, Tony? I didn't get it.
You didn't have one of these?
Nope.
Can you make some copies of these, please?
Thank you. COIC wants to be TriMet and Metro. Just if you want to know what they are, if you don't know what they do.
They're moving in that direction.
Oh, yeah. And you're right. You need to really, I haven't read anything up on this issue, but if you're doing bonds, somebody signs for bonds, which means there's potential debt to somebody.
That's
and
right.
Then they'll proportion it around or some way of doing that. They've talked about floating a regional tax before, which is what Metro does in Portland. They run the zoo, they run the TriMet, and they run those types of things. I think the bus drivers for this group, I think, belong to the Amalgamated Transit Union.
And
I don't know that, but I believe they do.
On this note, the council voted and approved funding for bus service.
$2,500.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Or is this a bad organization?
Yeah.
Or is this another organization?
The CET.
Yeah. Which one? Which is which? How many do we have?
Well, CET is a function of COIC, as I understand.
Yes.
And we gave them this $2,500 as our share for the 12 or 14 riders in the city that use the CET. Now that money's only going to last so long. It helped them raise $45,000 to continue, and that's only going to last so long. And now this is the follow-on to getting permanent funding.
And I'm not worried about this yet.
Yeah.
I know we need to be, but my question is, where did that money go?
Yeah, the $2,500.
It went to $2,500. Didn't it go to?
It got funded.
The little green bus that's over here at the county.
It goes for that service over and above the recommended time. In other words, the time was that it ran from this hour to this hour and stopped. And if you'll remember, we had customers coming in here asking us to provide transportation above the hours. And that money went for that, and the $2,500 that we gave them amounts to, or came out to about about a $40,000 grant.
And my concern is that money, the city gave that money, taxpayer money, and I had a rider come out to our facility, and I talked to the city manager about this, and I called the person that you gave me, and I haven't heard anything back.
You haven't heard anything from Scott?
No.
Okay.
And she was told that she had to stay, get off the bus, do her transactions, and the bus could not wait for her. So her transaction took 5 minutes. So she had to get off the bus, wait 20 minutes to a half hour for the bus to come back and pick her up when it would take her 5 minutes.
But that's probably true. My understanding is, if you have a, and I'm going to use the wrong terms, but you have a senior, call it a dial-a-ride type situation where people take a senior to a doctor appointment and then they come back and get them. It's kind of door-to-door. This is a fixed route. I mean, they go pick you up at your house, take you to Wikia or over here, but that's a fixed route schedule with times. I mean, it's got to go to Sun River because there's people waiting in a parking lot in Sun River. They can't go on the way to Bend, stop at a pharmacy for you to run in and pick up a drug, and then the next person on the bus says, I got to run in and get a chicken and food for less. This is a fixed bus route system, and what we funded was so that the lady with the Jaguar, remember she said she had a Jaguar, I think, or Mercedes, that she could be picked up at her house and could be dropped off at Wickham. She never then has to take her car because it was icky in the winter. That was on the tape.
Right.
Okay. And she's willing to pay that buck or whatever. You know, she was willing to pay that extra amount. But yeah, no, I don't think this is different than running people over to the clinic and waiting for them to go through their appointments.
Okay. Okay.
The Don made the comment that's very appropriate here. That when that was written, as I've had it explained to me by a county commissioner, Alan Unger, that program was funded as a fixed route program. They had plenty of money, so they said, well, let's take phone calls and go pick people up. And they got that expanded. And then all of a sudden they said, oh my gosh, we're out of money. We can't do that anymore. And then there was a hue and cry from the South County here, from people who had to be at school, had to be at work, and all of that. And they couldn't get from their house to the bus stop, the one down here and the one there. And so they needed more money. And they come to us asking us for they went to the county also, asking for $2,500. We gave them $2,500, and they used that $2,500 and the other money they collected and went off and got a $45,000 grant. And now they have continued the call us up and we'll come and get you if we're here in town and available. And we'll take you where you want to go. So this is an expanded service that appears that they want to continue under a bond measure of some kind.
No,
Am I wrong?
No, this is a tri-county bus service. It goes from Madras to Sisters to all the different communities, small communities around. And like Rick said, it's a scheduled run.
Right.
And you can pick up a bus here, and you can actually drive or get to Bend, transfer on another bus, go to Prineville or to Redmond or someplace like that, do whatever you want to, catch the bus, come back to Bend, and then back to Lapine. And what they're after is everything that they've had so far are funding grants. For instance, the city of Bend pays $3 million, and they pay that for, I think, 3 years. They've got two more years to go. So between now and the end of their funding contract, we need to come up with stable funding to keep the buses going. Now, the reason Bend is paying so much is because you know how they started up BAT, and they were buying buses that weren't too good and all that. Well, we managed now to get COIC to get them, and COIC has been getting some really good buses, and they're going good. But some of the taxing options that they put out for looking at is a property tax, a payroll tax, a levy of dues, local gas tax. utility fees, a local sales tax, and an increase in fares, or a combination thereof. So the thing that they would like to know is, we're in the program, and we're going to continue to be at the program, so how do we want to pay for our share, is basically what I'm
saying. Increase in fares.
I think what you were asking is about the local dialer
yes.
system. Yeah. And that's probably run through
COCO.
Organization.
That's all I know central. Is there's something broke
well, that's
there
the ET.
if they can't wait 5 minutes.
Well, the dialer, I
well,
said,
that,
they can
separate.
Wait. They can wait.
Well, according and to them, they can.
Did they call Ben?
I don't know. But if the lady, we can talk about this
yeah,
later.
Yeah.
If,
yeah.
And we have a counselor that needs to be excused here in a few minutes, and unless there's more comments.
Don, when do they want that answer on that fund?
Well, we'd like to have it as soon as we can get it. Hopefully, if the counselors come up with something, if they'll email me with their recommendation, I'll take it from there.
Can we discuss that at the planning, at our work session on the 27th?
Yes.
Or 27th?
Yes.
Okay. Is that? Okay. Other committee reports? Have we had the breadth of our staff reports?
Just one quick thing. We had scouts come to the Park and Rec meeting last night so to earn some of their badging, so the scouts were present at one of the council meetings that we recommended.
Okay. Council comments? Don?
I've made my comments.
I know you have. Dan?
Well, just real quick, when we went through this budget process, I thought you guys did a great job. It was very professional. I know it was complex and difficult, and you made us all a part of it, and we all got to have the input and look it over, and I really liked the way that turned out. So thank you to our staff.
Well, the big thing is we've got a budget now. And I would think that's one of the most important things that the council does during the course of the year. And what's nice about our budget is it's not just dollars and cents, but it's also goals and focuses and directions. So you gave staff a lot of guidance on how to proceed with what projects and what order to better the community.
Thank you.
There's two items that I'd like to bring to the council's attention. The mayor's conference this year will be on the 25th of July. They will again have a basket program that I think it's 60% of the basket funds go to the Mayor's Association scholarship program. We were very successful last year. I think the $25 that the city appropriated last year for that was enhanced by donations. And the last bid I saw in our basket was $75. And I'd like the councils to consider consenting to joining that program again this year.
Good vote.
No, just a consensus. I mean,
is that taking funding?
Take $25 is what we did last year, and we had a basket produced
right.
here in the city. So, do we need a consensus, or you want to take a vote? City manager?
Yeah.
Big ticket item.
Okay.
Go.
The other one is last year the High Lakes Car Club on the 4th of July at their car show gave a mayor's trophy, and they would like to do that again, and they would like to ask the city for a contribution for the trophy of $50.
Mayor's trophy, mayor donation, right?
Hey, that sounds good.
It has a certain ring to it.
Yeah.
say no more.
All right. Consensus?
I agree with that.
No.
There's always a spoiled sport in every crowd.
All right. Then, with that, with lack of consensus, I'd entertain a motion from the council to appropriate $50 for a mayor's trophy to participate in the Highlights Card Club.
I'm going to make that motion, but I also want to say, because it, a lot of folks come from out of town for that, and I think it is a representation from our city to those folks, kind of a welcoming, kind of friendly gesture. So I make that motion.
I'll second it.
Motion made and seconded. Any question? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
I'll go aye with the stipulation that this could have been put on our agenda ahead of time with some discussion, but I'll go aye.
Let the record reflect that it's unanimous. I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We're adjourned.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye